Welcome to the Not All Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang. You're listening to Ultra Runner Mark Cliggett, and we're about to hear more from him. But right now you're hearing Mark's trained, determined breath as he competes in one of his many ultra running events, including the historic Western States 100 Mile Endurance Run, which Mark will tell us all about in part two of this interview. In this, the first of the two parts interview, we sit down with Mark Cliggett as he tells us about what ultra running is and isn't. For one thing, in the sport of ultra running, cutting corners doesn't produce results, and while results per se are not always the goal, anything less than full commitment and devotion, really, to this sport can lead to injury and, well, worse. This is no exaggeration, and Mark will tell us all about his training regimen, the rigor, why he competes, and what we in the Not All Better audience can do to sort through some of the decisions to be made before taking on something like this sport, or volunteering, where to do it, how to begin. Mark's excellent blog, pointlenana.wordpress.com, which we'll link to from the Not All Better post, is a very detailed journey of events, Mark's thoughts, and planning, including some beautiful video and photography, which, courtesy of photographer Scott Rokas, will also add to the site. Join me today live via Skype in welcoming to the Not Old Better Show, Mark Cliggett. Mark Cliggett, welcome to the show. And Mark, let me, just for the sake of transparency, just let me quickly say that I am proud to call you my brother-in-law. You're married to my sister. I just mentioned that right up front because I've known you for a long time, and I know you're great boys. And I also know very personally how hard you work at everything, but in particular how hard you've worked on ultra running. And I think that gives our conversation today, a nice, genuine, kind of touch, because I've watched it. I've watched it closely. But my audience probably is unfamiliar with the term ultra running. They certainly are going to know marathons. What's the difference? Because as I look at some of your information online, the race distances for the category ultra running are kind of all over the map, but I think marathon is a specific distance. So maybe just define ultra running, and you've done both, right?
Yeah. Sure. Marathons, the standard marathon distance is 26.2 miles. Like hardcore runners get fairly serious about this, and they hear people talking about a 5K marathon and they laugh or something. But a marathon is 26.2 miles. Ultra marathon is sort of a grab bag term for anything longer than that. There are 50K, which is about 31 miles, so a little farther. There are 100 mile races. There's weird distance races of 130 miles. There's stage races that maybe go 150 miles over the course of 5 days, a little bit like the Tour de France, except you're running. And so it's just sort of this grab bag term, meaning you're out, that you're going beyond the ultra the marathon distance.
Sorry. And then the other part of it too, because there's a distance element, but there's also a geography element to ultra running. I mean, you could be on trails, you could be on single track, you could be on rocky terrain, and a marathon might not put you in some of those same circumstances.
Yeah, it's a good point. There's the distance different, and then there's a lot of other differences relative to your typical road race, like a marathon or a 5K or something like that. In ultras, often they're on trails. It might be sort of a dirt road kind of trail, or it might be pretty narrow hiking trail. A lot of times they'll be set in the mountains, so there's hills to deal with. The people tend to go much slower than they do in the other races, partly because the distance is farther, but partly because they're dealing with hills, so they'll walk up the hills or maybe have to pick their way down a really, really steep trail, steep rocky trail. People tend to eat a lot more during ultras because that's kind of the only way you can keep going is if you keep fueling. There's more gear to deal with. People will often wear a little pack and have to, you know, carry some kind of raincoat or hat or a headlamp because some of the distances are long enough that you go through the night. I think that's kind of the main set of differences. They also tend to be a lot smaller. I think like you have these big city marathons that have tens of thousands of people running in them. And I think I read the average size of an ultra in the United States is about 70 people. It's pretty common to have races with a couple hundred people in them. There are a few big ones out there that have maybe 1,000 or more, but most of them are pretty small races.
And so what do you prefer? I take it that you still are running sub-marathons, but which do you prefer, marathon or ultra-running?
I have a love-hate, well, like-hate relationship with marathons. I think that's sort of the hardest race because it's short enough, although most people wouldn't think that makes any sense. Anyway, it's short enough that you can go kind of all out for the whole race, and in an ideal marathon you finish just before you fall apart, and typically the last 6 miles or so, the last 45 minutes to an hour or something like that, is pretty uncomfortable and unpleasant. And if you run a really good race, again, you'd get through that just before you give up completely. And they're not that fun, but there is the challenge of trying to do one well. So I will do that every once in a while. And partly, I think the training is just good. I kind of know how to do that. Mm. So that I do those as a challenge. I really love the trail races. I love the longer distance stuff. I'm old and not particularly talented, so running a marathon, you know, it's just kind of running skill, and I can do so much there, and then I'm sort of hitting my natural limits. In ultra, there's a lot more going on. You have to plan a little more. You have to problem solve during the race. Typically, things go a little wrong somewhere, and you have to kind of sort things out. And you have to really pace yourself because you're going for a long way. Those are things that you can do even if you're old, and maybe I can do them a little bit better because I have experience and I'm not so gung-ho. So in a way, that just being on trails is great. Maybe it plays to my natural strengths a little bit more. And as you mentioned briefly, the community is really great. A typical road marathon, you show up, you run your race, maybe you see a few friends there. Whereas in the ultra world, people are, you know, we're all out there doing something kind of ridiculous, kind of hard, and we're all sort of cheering each other on. So after races, you hang out with people you've never met before, you chat with people during races, and it's a more, oddly, even though you're by yourself a lot, it's sort of a more social thing than running a faster race.
And just so everyone knows, you're neither old or untalented. You're a very talented runner, and this takes a lot of strength. It takes a lot of commitment, and again, I say this respectfully because I know how hard you work, but why do this? Why not just settle for a marathon and just kind of say, hey, you know, I can go on a hike anytime, but what's the attraction?
Well, just for transparency, I'm 54. I'm fine as a runner. You know, I have worked fairly hard trying to, but like my best marathon time, which I ran recently, was just under 3 hours and 20 minutes, which if you age adjust is, you know, maybe around a 3-hour marathon, which is decent. you know, people mm-hmm. aspire to that, and it's you know, I can pretty much go to Boston now if I want to. So in a way, you know, I'm okay, but I'm, you know, compared to someone who's truly good, I'm far from that. So I'm never doing it because I have a chance to win or anything like that. Marathons are, they're challenging. They beat me up a lot more. So I can train hard for a marathon for, say, 4 months or something, 6 months. I think I've done that. And then race day comes, and it's occasionally it works out, and it's satisfying and rewarding, and I meet my goal. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, if the weather's a little bit off, you know, I don't even have a chance of running my goal time before the race starts, just because it's too warm, or I'm a little off, I get sick just before it, or there's some, you know, I've overtrained and I've injured myself slightly. So there's a lot of times where it's kind of frustrating. There is still the benefit of the training, and there's always a chance it'll be a good day. So it's something, and I've had plenty of fun there. But really, I like being outside on mm-hmm. in the, you know, in a fairly wild place often, or at least a beautiful place. There is something about just going further and finding out, you know, it's pretty surprising what people are capable of, what I myself am capable of. And when I started doing this, I thought these people were just like incredible athletes and amazingly gifted, and I was way over my head. But it turns out pretty much most of us are pretty ordinary, and we're just willing to keep going and be a little more uncomfortable for a little longer than we thought we were capable of.
It's like, because your blog, your WordPress site, and we'll put up a link to Point Lenana. Point Lenana? I just want to make
Point
sure.
Lenana, yes.
Point Lenana,
yes.
Point Lenana. PointLenana.wordpress.com. We'll put up a link. There are some just wonderful photos of the terrain and this outdoor setting that you're in. And it's just beautiful. And I think that's got to be an attraction. But there's also on the blog a list of goals, you know, some great humor, some really excellent videos. And it struck me as I was looking through it that it's almost a diary. It could be kind of a journal, a journal specifically of your running and your observations. So it seems like there's a little bit of a cerebral piece to this, because I then went out and searched for, you know, marathon blogs. And there are some, but not at all like yours.
Again, a really good marathon is nothing happens. You run at the same, almost exactly the same pace within a few seconds for 26.2 miles. And if you have a good race, nothing happens. It's kind of boring. There's no falls. You don't go off the course. It's sort of the same over and over. And most marathon courses are they have some hills, but they're relatively flat. So you're going up and down a little bit, and eventually get to the finish, and it's great. And people who are into marathons can look at mile splits and how fast you run each mile and stuff like that. And it's sort of interesting, but there's often not really any stories to tell. Whereas in a 100-mile race, there's a lot that goes on for me personally and for the people around me. And, you know, there's often some cool views or something weird happens. You know, I saw a bear in a race this mm-hmm. summer. That's kind of cool. So mm-hmm. I think there's just more going on that's worth recording in some ways. And I put it into a blog because it's somewhere where it's really for myself, so that I can go back and look at this stuff at some point. Go, oh, yeah, right, I remember that. And that was pretty fun. Or, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, that was weird. Or, yeah, that's right, I saw that. But the other reason, I mean, I could do that, you know, in a diary offline or something like that. But one thing that is helpful for me going into these races is to read about other people's experiences. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a section in the middle that's really treacherous, or they didn't have enough water at this place. And so it helps me a little bit to read about other people's experiences. And so if I can write something that helps someone else, that's good. And then occasionally some other people read it. I mean, I think I got a lot of hits, and I'm talking about like 200 one day when a runner podcast linked to one of those posts. And it was about a time where we volunteered for a race.
Tell us that about the experience, particularly an experience of the race day, and maybe even give us a pre-race day kind of summary as to, you know, if you've got a race coming up in 2 weeks, what are you doing today? And then during the race, what goes on? You know, what's the race prep? Are you being so careful, knowing that this distance is just potentially so taxing, that you're monitoring some vital signs, really paying attention to heat and exhaustion and dehydration? And it would seem that all of that, it could factor into your success on a trail for 150 miles. So I would imagine you're paying close attention to that.
Yeah, I'm going to back up one step further to the sort of the training step.
Good, that's good.
One thing about these ultra races, especially some of the popular ones that kind of everyone wants to do, the bucket list races, is you have to, some of them are hard to get into, and either you just have to sign up early or there's a lottery. And this often takes place many months before the race happens. Like, there's a race I did this last year where the sign up was a year beforehand. So you kind of know this race is out there way, way before you ever actually run it. So there's that element of it. And then at some point there's the training part of it. And while, you kind of want to be generally running fit for these things, each race tends to have its own challenges. It might be a very hilly race, so you have to be ready for that. Or it might be a race that tends to be hot. Or it might be a particularly long race where the aid stations with food and water are pretty far apart. So you have to kind of figure out how you're going to survive between aid stations. Some of that stuff is just sort of logistical gear kinds of stuff. Some of it actually requires training, and I'll, you know, I tend to be kind of training somewhat year round, but 4 to 6 months I might start working up towards it, and I'll sort of tweak my training depending upon what kind of races it is. If there's a lot of hills, I will try to add lots of hills to my daily runs and stuff. So I do that for a while. And then, like you say, the race gets close. A couple weeks before the race, I'm generally thinking about what gear I need, which backpack I'm going to carry, if I need a third water bottle. Normally, I'll carry two water bottles. If it's really hot, I'll carry a third one. There's a long list of gear that I've carried at least once on a race, and I actually keep a spreadsheet on that. So I just go through and say, do I need this? Do I need that? Mm-hmm. Because forgetting something like a headlamp is a bad idea if you need that.
Yeah.
So it's easier to have a checklist and just say, no, I don't need that for this race. So then I'll assemble it, the stuff.
And let me just stop you for a second, because I just want to call out that one element, and that is that the headlamp, you're running, you know, many of these instances, you're running 24 hours, so you're running at night. And so your preparation has to even include some of the night element too, right?
Right. And people will actually go out and practice running at night. That might be good, but I'm lazy about that. And what I've found is, you need to know that your headlamp works. You need to be at least somewhat comfortable with the idea of running at night. But after doing it a few times, like, I don't think it helps me to practice. I know that I'm going to go more slowly. I know that I have to worry about how long my headlamp is going to last, and do I have a backup or spare batteries or whatever. But I don't actually go out and practice that anymore. I ran a race once at night with for a few hours with a headlamp to see what it was like, and then I've done these a few 100-mile races where I've had to run through the night, and I feel like I've had plenty of practice on that. But yeah, I mean, it is, it's something you have to sort out, and I'm sure I could do better at it with some practice, but that's not something I practice for. I do practice for hills, because if I don't do that, then I just, my body falls apart. Whereas the headlamp, it's really a matter, running at night is a matter of just going at a speed that's appropriate and making sure that your headlamp lasts through the night.
And how are you the night before the race? Have you done the, you've gone through the spreadsheet, started to check things off? I assume that you can even get out onto the course, and maybe not all courses allow this, but I assume you can even deposit some gear kind of along the way at certain mileage points, maybe. And so all that's happened, and you've checked that off, and then are you able to sleep the night before?
Well, so that last week before race, typically I'm fairly cranky because I can't run very much because I have a race coming up, but I'm sort of... I've spent all this time training for it and putting my stuff together, and so it's sort of a, I just have to try to remember to be patient and not bite the heads off of the people around me. Like you say, there's the day before the race, I just try to eat appropriately. For a lot of these races, the very long ones, they do let us put drop bags out on the course. Mm-hmm. And what happens is you bring those to the start, and then they truck them off to various spots around the race where we can collect them later and get stuff out, and then they'll bring them back to the finish for us. So it's not so much me driving around depositing that. Typically the race will do that. I often run the course blind because it's somewhere where I don't live. I may travel in the day before, show up, and just find out what the course is like while I'm out there. This is why I will look for blogs or write-ups before the race to get some sense, maybe see some pictures. The night before, I was really anxious for a while for some races, and gradually that's gotten better. I'm usually able to fall asleep. I'll often wake up earlier than I have to. A lot of times we have to wake up really early because the race might start at 5 a.m. in the morning, which means I have to get up and eat and, get myself dressed and go to the bathroom, which is always a key goal before the race starts.
Yeah.
Sometimes there'll be porta potties out there and stuff, but it's really helpful if you can deal with most of that before you get out. We head out to the start. I'm usually there an hour or so before it starts. Sometimes I'll know someone, or at least recognize people. Locally, I'll often have a bunch of friends there, and we'll say hi. And again, these races are pretty small, so like 5 minutes before the race, they kind of tell us to move towards the start line, and we'll kind of, this little clump of people will head over there, and then the race starts.
So there's no staggered start necessarily. It's just everybody goes.
I can't think of any ultra that I've been in that had any kind of wave start. Even there's this big race in Europe called UTMB, where you run around Mont Blanc through France, Italy, and Switzerland. And, I think that's the largest trail race in the world. I think there's about 2,300 people who start that race, and we all started at the same time. It's not that many people. But there we start through the streets of Chamonix, so there's enough room. And
This is just fascinating. We could go for a long time, but this is all the time that we have with Mark today. But stay tuned for part two of this really excellent interview with Mark Liggett. We'll put up part one and part two on the website. You'll find it at iTunes and Google Play. But part two is going to be equally fascinating, because Mark's going to talk about some of his memorable races and inspiring stories from some of Mark's races, too. You're not going to want to miss that. And then Mark will offer an excellent list of resources for runners and volunteers, and and anyone interested in learning more about ultra running. So, Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. And we're going to have you back and talk more about some of these other items. But thanks, Mark.
You're welcome. Thanks.